This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Back, folks, here at the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. And joining us this morning is Brian Cook to talk AFC Ann Arbor. How are you doing this morning, Brian?
I could do that if you wanted me to. That. Yeah.
And we can flip a coin to decide what we'll talk about.
At least it won't be a coin flip.
Oh, my
right?
God.
It will not be a coin flip.
So, like, I was talking to Rishi, and he's like, yeah, we set it up so we have a contingency plan in Wixom, which is 20 minutes away from where both teams were, and now they're driving like 4 hours to go play the rest of this game, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Is there any other sport, any other league, where the team that refuses to play doesn't get charged with a forfeit?
I don't know. It's the MPSL. You got to roll with the punches. That's part of the charm, is that wacky stuff happens and everybody's really upset. It's a little bit like wrestling, and you just got to go with it.
I gotcha. Well, at least they're going to play. They're going to play it out, and we'll see how it goes. And hopefully AFC will wind up on top. But, you know, normally during football, basketball season, and a little bit after now, this is the MGO Blog Roundtable. Well, as we get closer to the season, it gives us an opportunity to have the fellas back in to talk about Hail to the Victors 2019, an independent production of MGO Blog, Brian Cook, Seth Fisher, and several contributors, a couple of which also join us. First of all, Brian and Seth are here. Seth, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
We have my man Greg Dooley in studio from mvictors.com. Greg, how are you?
Good morning, Sam. I'm great. Great to be here.
And Craig Ross, live from Hawaii. Hey, Craig, you gonna get over to, you know, talk to Roman Wilson a little bit, scout him a little bit?
No, I just know about him, but
I think they're doing some 7-on-7 things.
Him.
I think they're doing
some... he's on a different island, actually. He's in Honolulu. We're on a different island. I think the only football player from our island is Max Unger.
And so how long does it, what, I don't know what island you're on, but how long does it take to get from where you are to where Roman Wilson is?
It's about a 30-minute air flight.
Oh, we might have to work that out, Greg. Right?
Roman Wilson did that every morning for school.
That's true. He did. I think he moved to Oahu, so, you know, that's...
Yeah, Honolulu. Honolulu is on Oahu.
What? Oh, is
Honolulu it? Honolulu is on Oahu, yes.
I don't know stuff about Hawaii. Also, I'm very tired this morning because I have a baby who was a bad baby.
There's no such thing as a bad baby.
There is.
There is not.
There is. There was, like, at night they can be bad.
There is no such thing. Just like every baby is cute, right?
Well, not every baby is cute. But mine is, but not every baby. I've seen some babies that I'm like, nah.
All right, let's get back on track. Hail to the Victors 2019.
It's my baby.
So, right, it's your baby. So, Seth, one of the great things about this is there's a lot of retrospective pieces. And last week we focused on the 69 retrospective, but there are some historic pieces, some historical pieces as well. And one of those, and he contributes to this every year, by our friend Craig Ross on the phone.
Yeah. Craig has been working for the last few years. He's kind of went back and did the first year of college football and, like, the origin of college football. And then he's been kind of working his way forward ever since then. And he and I are actually going to turn this into a book now. So,
oh, wow.
We're you're reading parts of what's going to be the Seth and Craig book. But this one was really fun. I mean, we're talking back. Brian was mentioning AFC Ann Arbor. You kind of have to roll with the punches. This is how college football used to work, too. So this was this year that like Craig talked about. I mean, Michigan was flat broke, so they had to borrow some money from a couple professors, get on a train, try to make enough playing Purdue that they can go and play the next team in Indiana. Don't make enough, so they have to, like, you know, illegally jump on a boxcar train and get back to West Lafayette because they're – original tickets were from there, and it was just like the crazy things are going on. At the same time, the colleges are starting to figure out that, like, this is big money for them. It's like Harvard cancels their team, loses a ton of money in donations, and then like, okay, I guess we have to have football again. And University of Chicago starts with the plan of having a college football team as like the front porch of the university. So like you have this weird situation in like the early history of college football where a lot of the teams are just kind of playing like AFC Ann Arbor, and like, some of them are getting like massive financial support and functioning almost like a modern team.
So Craig, I mean, this was obviously right up your alley, right?
Yeah, this is what I've been studying and writing about for the last year and a half now. And Seth, I promise I'll have a final version to you Sunday night. My friend here, he's a Ann Arbor lawyer and also a historian, John Rowe, has been editing what I wrote, and he did his edits, and I'm editing his edits. And then Seth is going to do some rewrites and some of his own writing. I wasn't sure how this was going to work exactly, but I know Seth will pull it all together. But it's hard to believe how chaotic football was back at that time. I looked the other night from the first football game ever, in my opinion, which was Michigan versus Racine College in 1879. 1869, Princeton and Rutgers was just a soccer game and a disorganized one at that.
So why is this a matter of opinion, and why is this not a stated fact that it was the first football game?
Well, no one who has researched it actually thinks Princeton and Rutgers is the first football game. No one. Not even the Princeton historians, which I talk about in this book, believe it was a football game. They have some rationalization that, it wasn't a football game, but there was a ball, you know, basically, and it was intercollegiate, which indeed it was, and intercollegiate events were rare, but there was intercollegiate baseball to some limited degree going back pretty much to the Civil War. So I created a set of things that made something a football game. And really, a guy named Walter Camp at Yale created some rules in the fall of 1878, but no one was really playing by those rules until 1879. Well, on an oddity, the first game played in 1879 was Michigan and Racine in May of 1879. And so it really was the first game that could be called a football game. But thereafter, Michigan football was tepid, to say the least. There were 55 total games, I believe, going into 1892, and only 16 were in Ann Arbor because they had to find, they would take these train rides out east in 1881 and 1883 to play, you know, all the top teams and mostly get beaten up.
Right. The problem with being the first team west of Appalachia is there is literally no other team west of Appalachia.
Didn't these guys have to go to class, or is that not like required in the 1800s?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because that's a great question, Brian, actually, because it isn't clear. There was no governing body. There was no real rules. There was routine pissing matches between Harvard and Yale in particular about what the rules should be and who can play games, whether you can rip someone's eyeball out of their socket, which happened in 1894 in a game. And that sort of thing. I mean, it was very, very chaotic. By 1892, whether Michigan football is going to survive is a major question. As Seth pointed out, the money, in this one case to go to Purdue, they had to borrow money from a professor. Purdue stiffed them, as far as I can tell, out of their guarantee. So they didn't have any money to pay the dude back. So they ended up hopping a freight train, or at least that's the story.
They were going to play DePaul already, but they got to DePaul and they didn't have enough money for a train back from DePaul to West Lafayette. But I mean, I thought what was incredible is that at the same time as this is going on, they start like it wasn't the Big Ten yet, but they started something just like the Big Ten. It was Wisconsin and Michigan and a few other, but like the guy they put in charge of it, to tell you how serious they actually thought this was, the guy they put in charge of it was Ralph Stone, who was like the student body president of Michigan at the time.
Yeah, right. I mean, by 1893, Michigan had barely played a home game against anything that would be called a college football team except for Oberlin College, who was the power in Ohio at that time. They routinely waxed Ohio State. And the, you know, so in 1893, they finally did play some actual games in Ann Arbor. They got killed by Wisconsin and Minnesota, and the Daily was about, was putting the whole football program on life support. They had no money. They played their first actual home games in Ann Arbor. I think they played at, Seth may know this, at Burns Park, which was the fairgrounds at the time. And so they lost.
At Burns Park?
You didn't have to fit any fans on there. It was just like squeeze a football game and you're fine. Yeah.
And they lost. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying the conference thing is what actually made that possible, because the conference starts the year before in 1892, and like one of the ways that Michigan got everyone to agree to the conference and the rules that they wanted, which included using players who'd played professionally before, was one of the things that Michigan wanted. So the reason why the other schools agreed is Michigan agreed to play all of their conference games on the road in 1892. In return for getting those conference games back in 1893, if it works. Mm. Like, if this thing doesn't just fall down upon us and, like, it's just a miserable failure, then everyone's got to come and visit us. So Minnesota and Wisconsin come and visit Michigan in back-to-back weeks, and both of them beat Michigan. And, like, now Michigan looks terrible because they've lost to Chicago, they lost to Chicago, they lost to Minnesota, they lost to Wisconsin. They look like a miserable football team. And then they – and, like, that was the moment when, like, there's no fans – the Michigan Daily is like, okay, I guess maybe this isn't going to work. The school is kind of like rubbing their hands like, sweet, we get to get rid of football. And then Michigan goes on the road to Purdue and just wipes them. And
46-8, yeah.
Right, right. And Purdue is like actually writing literally they should not get on the train. Like, don't even bother. You're not going to – because Purdue had won 16 games or something in a row. And
that's
like,
correct, 16 in a row.
Right, and Michigan comes out and wins 46-8. And like they, Purdue is like, oh, they cheated. They think that like, they're writing like, oh, Michigan, this guy wasn't the guy they said it was. This guy is like some former pro they picked up on the way.
You went back to the 1890s and read all the message boards.
that's what the newspapers were, man. Like, this is like the Michigan Daily started what, a couple of years before this. So like,
yeah, 1890 was the first year.
Right. So the student papers were basically our message board.
Gotcha. All right. Well, so you have another historical piece, and the other one we're going to talk about today was penned by Greg Dooley from mvictors.com, talking about old man Yost.
Yeah, I submitted a 5,000-word stream of consciousness to Seth, and what came out was this beautifully tight written history, really 30 years of Yost's tenure at Michigan. So, and by the way, congratulations, guys, on the book. It feels like an A. The weight, the color. I have not. I just got my copy, but it feels like an A. So well done. Well done.
Yeah, so, this one is appropriately titled The Old Man, because Dooley submitted actually a whole bunch of ideas on, like, you know, what are we going to talk about? Like, because he'd done a thing on Yost for Bacon's old class, right?
Yeah, I do a lecture on Yost for the history of college athletics, and this was adapted from that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he was like, okay, pick something from here that you want. And I was like, okay, well, we could do, you know, Yost cheating, because that was like a theme, that was a thing that happened. But like the part that I thought was interesting is we always talk about Yost at the beginning of his career, like the, you know, the point-a-minute teams and stuff. But then if you cut out the first 20 years of Yost, there's still another 20 years of, like, maybe, like, the best one of the best coaches and best athletic directors we've ever had. So, like, I'm like, let's talk about that. So Dooley, you know, went back, of course, kind of had to take us there. So the article starts and gets us to that point of, you know, Yost and boasting and how the guy couldn't stop talking about himself. But it's also kind of a comparison between, you know, Fielding Yost and Amos Alonzo Stagg and that cheater at Notre Dame at the time.
Well, which I'll tell you, and the Stag thing gets in my craw, right? Because we all know that, well, I think most people know that the Big Ten championship trophy is now just the Stag trophy. It was the Stag Paterno or Paterno. And of course, Joe Pa's name's off it now. So it's just the Stag trophy. But this from a guy who hasn't coached since the early 1930s, whose team, Chicago, left the Big Ten in the late 1930s, yet our championship trophy is named after him. And Yost has a higher winning percentage, really, really set to me is one of the guys who set the foundation. So I understand that Stagg's name is on the trophy and his name is endured, but to me, it is a bit of an injustice that Yost's name doesn't quite have the recognition. And we talk about why that is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make me think it's right though, Seth. And I do think,
I mean, there is one good reason. There is one very good reason. And like we've talked, you talk about that pretty well in the book. Yeah.
So wait, a couple of things there that are striking. Number one, so there was this thing about Yost being a cheater. That was out there. And then number two, the win one for the Gipper guy was a cheater too?
Well, you gotta put cheating in context too.
Okay.
These are different days. Okay. But were there alumni funds to help players? Were there fake loans? Were rules absolutely bent, if not broken? Absolutely. But it gets back to what you guys were talking about before. There were inconsistent rules. There was really no governing body. And I hate to say it, but everybody kind of did it.
So it's fair to say cheating was a matter of perspective. You weren't really breaking any.
No, they had rules. They had rules. They just, I mean, they were enforced about as well as they are today. And so they were paid attention to about as much as they are today.
They had rules. And in fact, the founding of the Big Ten was really about the faculty trying to get control of this.
Gotcha.
And you can argue they're still trying to get. But yes, there was more things I think that were accepted and more things you could enforce back. The list of reasons why Harry Kipke was fired, your eyes would pop out of your head. But I think back then, but if he did that here today, you know, he can't come back, man.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still embraced by the university. But Rockne and Yost, they went back and forth at each other with some pretty rough accusations around game rule cheating and over personality, racism, bigotry, all this stuff. They went back and forth. But one thing they really didn't go back on each other was the paying of players or arranging for fake loans that were never to be repaid or jobs that were secured after, you know, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they knew they were both doing it and neither really wanted to get out there. So it was happening.
It was the old school SEC.
Yeah.
Basically you're saying.
And that's kind of how it went. And it's absolutely true. And Yost had other flaws for a man who, absolutely, he seemed to have kept all his writing. He's stopped talking, but he had some bigoted. His father was a Confederate soldier, fought for the South, didn't have to. He's from West Virginia. West Virginia was actually not a Confederate state. It was actually created as counties that did not want to join the Confederacy. Mm-hmm. His father crossed the line, joined the Virginia Army, and we know the Willis Ward story. Mm-hmm. Yost doesn't come out of that looking very good. And that's absolutely wrong. But you got to put that, you also have to, I think, have to put that in historical context. But the sum total of the things Yost did during an era where college football, the foundation was literally laid from the rules, the conferences to the stadiums were poured, that are still standing. We had this man lead our school in coaching and then as an AD through that period. And really, to me, it's the reason why we're looking at all the things that we're looking around this athletic campus today. And it comes down to this. And you read this article, I'll tell you, you will be able to impress your friends and know. And for many of you, I think it'll spark some more interest in this man and this era.
That's a great, great, great stuff. All this and the C9 retrospective that we covered with the hour last week. So, again, folks, if you don't have Hail to the Victors 2019, you need to get it. Seth, tell them how they can do that.
Go on our website, go on mgoblogstore.com, and you can also go into a store. They have it at Underground Printing, the Bow Store, Literati, MDen, Nick Colas Books, and the Split Mitten Flint now has it too. You can also get it on Kindle.
But he got it. We need to get to a break. I found out that Shea Patterson at his family lived in Flint for a period of time.
Oh, yeah?
That's it. I'm kind of from Flint.
Yep.
Kind of from Flint, too. I lived there for a few years. We got to get to a break. We can come back on the other side. There is a lot more to cover in this magazine. I know we spent a lot of time talking about Michigan football history, but the present.
Yeah, we have four other sections in this book.
Yeah, is covered in great detail. As we look ahead to the season, season previews, opponent previews, it's all in here. Hail to the victors 2019. We'll get more into it on the other side here. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the MDN studios, and we have our friends from MGO Blog here in studio talking about Hail to the Victors 2019, an independent production of MGO Blog. Brian Cook and Seth Fisher are here in studio. Welcome back, fellas.
Hello.
We have Craig Ross on the phone. Welcome back, Craig.
Howdy. I'll let you finish, but I have one footnote on Yost that's not very well known, but go ahead.
Okay, well, you can go ahead and throw that in because Greg Dooley stepped away from M Victors. Oh, okay. He was just here to talk about his segment. So, what do you have on Yost?
Well, few people know that Yost actually played against Michigan in one game. He was the head coach at Ohio Wesleyan, known as the Battling Bishops at the time, and they called Michigan in 1897 and set up a midweek game, Wednesday game, I think. But then Yost was one of the great players of his time, played at West Virginia, but it was also a Rena player at Lafayette, and they upset Penn, I think, in one of the big games in the 1890s. And then decided he transferred to Lafayette for a week where he was going to be an engineer, said, nah, I don't like engineering, and then transferred back to law at West Virginia where he had been playing the prior week. And so he was the head coach at Ohio Wesleyan in 1897 for a year, got in touch with Michigan and said, hey, will you guys want to play us for a midweek game? And they said, Michigan said, yeah, but then Yost said, by the way, I have to play because we only have 10 guys. And so they said, okay, and he showed up, and he was a factor, and that game ended up being a 0-0 tie in the Daily. As someone said, they're like, was the student newspapers were the posting boards of their day, and these papers would get into these various pretty amusing pissing wars back and forth. But the Daily just hated Yost, and almost 2 or 3 months didn't go by without them taking some shot at Yost and how dirty his team was and blah, blah, blah. Then, of course, when he showed up in Ann Arbor, there was a lot of revisionist history about this game and about their clamoring about Yost. In any event.
And I knew, look, if there's anything that we can glean from the conversations here is that, you know, our celebration of Yost's significance, that you got to frame it with the times, that, you know, some of the things that were brought up certainly can't be looked favorably upon, but he was a product of his era. So,
well, you have to understand there weren't really any rules. I mean, schools defined their own rules. I mean, Michigan really in the 1890s had their own rules. But they were playing like the Detroit Athletic Club that was a throwdown team rife with professionals of various sorts. When they played Minnesota and Wisconsin, they probably had a combined 2 students actually enrolled in both those games at Michigan and Wisconsin, whereas Michigan was mostly playing with students, or all students, really. Now, some of them were getting some fake loan deals on the side, I believe. But Michigan was actually, compared to the competition, reasonably clean. And maybe another day we'll talk about the presidents of the university, because Michigan's James Burrell Angel was relatively sane as compared to the completely insane Elliott at Harvard, and even more insane Williams Harper Rainey at University of Chicago. So actually, Michigan, in my reading of the history, my study of it, Michigan comes off pretty good compared to the other schools that were competing at football at the time.
Let's talk about the other schools that are competing in football now in the Big Ten. You got half the league whose coaches are set to speak to the media today. Levy Smith, Illinois, Tom Allen, Indiana, Mike Loxley, Maryland, Mark D'Antonio, Michigan State, P.J. Fleck, Minnesota, Scott Frost, Nebraska, Ryan Day, Ohio State. I want to talk to you guys a little bit first about Nebraska, because there are some believers of the, in the Scott Frost hype. Now, this is a team that started off 0-6 last year. Now they finished with the second best offense in the league in yards per game. But when you talk about Adrian Martinez being, you know, outstanding talent that he is, man, he had a huge workload. And can you mitigate? Can you spread some of that out this year?
Yeah, Scott Frost is their Harbaugh, right? He's the guy who's going to come back, who could have gone anywhere and came to Nebraska. He's probably the only guy who thought the Nebraska job was worth that. So, I mean, they're still high on Scott Frost. And I thought last year was kind of like just year zero for them, right? Like, they had a lot of problems, especially on defense. Those are not getting solved overnight. But Scott Frost is really good at putting together an offense out of just a few parts. So he didn't have a whole lot of talent down in Florida. And their offense was pretty good. Like, you need to score a few points, right? And they're good at that. And with Taylor Martinez, you've got a guy who can run that offense just fine. So
Taylor Martinez?
Adrian Martinez.
Hey, we all do.
I'm sorry. I saw his throwing motion, and my brain immediately went right back.
No, they're not related. No. I mean, Martinez is comparing him to Taylor Martinez is completely unfair. He completed something like 65% of his passes last year, some close to 9 yards an attempt as a true freshman. And he had some dudes at receiver. J.D. Spielman's back, but Stanley...
Morgan
is gone, so that'll be a big replacement for them. The running back, Divine Azigbo, is gone, so they've got some guys to replace. But for me, it's can they recover from what was a really soft and bad offensive line for much of the year? I mean, Michigan knocked him out of the game halfway through, and that it didn't seem like he was healthy. It's just like Frost was like, this is a bad idea.
And that's one of the things that I wonder, because Azigbo, he led them. He had like 15 or 16 more rushing attempts than Martinez. But when you're putting that kind of workload on your quarterback, are those read option plays, or is he scrambling for his life?
Well, there's some of both. Like, you know, he had about 200 yards in the sack yards that he took last year. So he had over 800 yards on the ground. And that's, I mean, we've seen that kind of crop up as being a problem for some guys, especially his stature. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not
the biggest guy.
Yeah, he's not any of the Ohio State quarterbacks we've seen over the past X number of years. He's more Denard shaped. Mm-hmm. He's not Denard fast. But so that will be a concern for them. Especially because I think Riker Fife is going into his 800th year as the backup quarterback.
So
is he still on the? I don't know. I don't know
because you know what? They're not on our schedule, so I didn't really care.
Yeah.
You know, it was striking to me that a couple of writers have Nebraska beating Michigan in the Big Ten title game. It was striking to me that one of the odds makers has Adrian Martinez with better Heisman odds than Shea Patterson.
Ooh.
Like, man.
Well, that's workload. Like, he's gonna have some numbers.
Don't you have to win?
Yeah, you do have to win, but they're playing in the Big Ten West. Like, it's not that hard. Yeah. Like, Wisconsin doesn't have a quarterback. You know, Minnesota is like, ooh, they've got some skill position guys. But they're still the team that was playing two true freshmen last year, one of a walk-on at quarterback. So, like, you know, they might pop up, but they might easily just kind of... Not
so who do you like over there? I mean, are you a Purdue disciple? Do you think Nebraska gets it done?
I think that
Minnesota-Purdue game at the beginning of the Big Ten schedule, I think that carries a lot of weight as to what happens on that side of the ledger. Now, I was surprised to see Minnesota handle Purdue last year. I picked Purdue in that game, and Purdue got destroyed.
Yeah, Purdue is going to be... I mean, Rome's going to have that program much higher than Purdue's been lately, but they're another... Like, that was another year zero project, which looked really good because they had, like, an amazing Heisman candidate player. But you're still... Purdue just doesn't have the talent to, like, go into every game and, you know, once in a while, they're just going to get outrun. They're just going to get, like, shoved around by somebody.
And, I mean, it's... Yeah. Does anybody have the ability to... like deal with the fact that Jonathan Taylor exists?
Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Can they outscore?
Well, they don't have defensive tackles.
Can they outscore the Badger run game, basically? Because that's what it's going to be. And like their quarterback situation can't be worse than it was last year.
Right. So, that's why I picked Wisconsin on that side.
I mean, does anyone else like Iowa?
It's wide open.
You know, I was scarred by the Penn State game with Nate Stanley. I mean, they had every opportunity in that game. If he just plays okay.
Yeah, but that was like a winner game.
If he just plays okay, though, but he was abysmal.
Yeah, but that happens, especially in the Big Ten West. Like, well, every quarterback is going to like just throw a game.
And his top receiving options are gone now.
That's true, but they've always got the possibility of unearthing some white guy from Iowa. Oh wait, I think I know who that might be. And Tristan Wirfs and Alaric Jackson are both Alton Big Ten caliber tackles.
Name.
Hey, guess who's in line to start at Oklahoma this year?
And Mekhi Becton made like all the lists for top guys of his class.
Have you seen USC's offensive line recruiting this year?
I have not.
They are all ranked outside the top 1,000 on 24/7. So believe me, I know all about the guys Michigan didn't get and the guys that USC is currently getting.
Yeah, they could have had a lyric.
I know. You told me that. And I was like, all right, well, we obviously need to tackle. Let's start writing up his hello post. And then it was like, no, we're not going to send this guy into LOI. I was like, what are you doing? Anyway.
That's in the book. Yeah. But,
did I trash talk to Trim Tebrow from the book? I don't remember doing that, but.
I think there's a couple times where we probably, that comes up.
A reference.
I believe your offensive line preview is like, it's over.
Yes. I do want to. When we come back, because these two teams are up today, and they happen to be obviously Michigan's, two biggest rivals, Michigan State and Ohio State. Want to, dedicate some time to them. On the other side, Michigan State, I think, is gonna have the best defense in the league, and Ohio State is Ohio State. Yep. So let's tackle them. We'll return before we get to the break. Seth, tell people how they can get their hands on. Hail to the victors 2019.
You just go to our website. You go to mgoldblogstore.com. You can also walk into a store, Underground Printing, Bose Store, Literati, the M-Den, Nicola's Books, and the Split Mitt and Flint, or you can get it on Kindle.
All right, back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. Hail to the victors 2019 should be your source, your preview source for the Michigan football season, an independent production of MGO Blog, edited by Brian Cook, Seth Fisher as well. So I have several contributors. You heard Dr. Sapp last week. Greg Dooley was just here. He contributed a piece. Craig Ross is on the phone. He contributed a piece. Craig, we'll start with you. What do you think of the Michigan State Spartans this year?
Well, I think Sam, said that they would have the best defense in the Big Ten, and I think that's probably right. Certainly, their front seven is probably going to be the best, toughest in the conference. Their offense is a question. I mean, quarterback was terrible for them last year. I don't like their running back very much. They got one wide receiver, and their offensive line is not great. So, I don't know. I mean, they always seem to, or not always, but they generally seem to do better than I think they'll do. But I think this year they'll be a factor again. After this year, you have to wonder, because most of that defense goes, and their recruiting hasn't been very good. Uh-huh. But this year, I think they're still a factor.
Kind of feels like the last hurrah to me.
Yeah.
They were 7-6 last year, and I don't. Yeah. Are they going to win 8 games? That's a possibility. Are they going to win 9? That starts looking kind of questionable. I mean, they lost a game 9-6 to Nebraska
last
year.
They scored 6 points in 3 of their last 4 games. 6 points.
Yeah,
you remember playing Nebraska defense.
Yeah.
Where it's like 3 down G's or a touchdown. And they scored 6 points against those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look for changes, like, or is anything to look forward to? They shook up.
They pulled the Brady Hoke.
Yeah.
They shuffled the deck chairs.
No, Brady Hoke moved like 3 people. They moved everyone. Everyone who had a job on the offense got a new job. They took like Blake Treadwell, who I guess was on defense before, but was a former offensive coordinator. I think they're up to 6 former Michigan State offensive coordinators or co-offensive coordinators on that staff. The deck chairs are rearranged now.
Well, and if you look at their recruiting, it's like, man, this staff is old and they aren't getting after it. Because, like, they have 3 kids in Michigan. The top ranked of them is 17th.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, they got no shot at any of the guys who are uncommitted in the state, and like Kentucky's eating their lunch in Ohio. It kind of feels like this is, and they've essentially been a 7-5 team for the past 4 or 5 years. They had the 3-9 season, but they were better than, like, if you look at the underlying numbers, they were much better than that. They just got really unlucky. And they had a 9-3 season, but if you look at the underlying numbers, they got really lucky. So mm-hmm. if like,
was that the block punt year?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, they've kind of settled into being old Michigan State for the past 5 years, where it's like, yeah, they're going to be 500. They're going to be within a game of it. And I don't really see that changing for them unless, you know, the fact that Brian Lewerke was hurt last year was the reason that he was terrible at football.
Yeah, they got to hope that, you know, they did have a lot of injuries on the offensive line last year. That was a big issue. So having a healthy offensive line, are those guys good enough to, you know, help Brian Lewerke kind of get over being shook? I mean, he has that punch drunk syndrome. You could see it when he was out there. And granted, you know, he probably came back and not 100%. He did come back before he was 100%.
I mean, it kind of felt like when Chad Henne was playing in the Ohio State game, where it's just like, this guy has no business being on the field. Especially against Michigan, where there were like some opportunities where they could have hit Michigan for 20-yard chunks and he turfed every single one of them. Like, that's, I mean, I've seen him play before. Like, he's not that bad. Mm. He wasn't as bad as he showed last year. So,
all right. So let's move on over to Ohio State. You know, obviously a ton of change there. No more Urban Meyer, no more Dwayne Haskins. And yet they are still immensely talented. The only proving ground we've seen for Ryan Day, you know, significant proving ground. I know he had an interim, you know, he was the interim guy while, you know, the fill-in guy while Urban was out last year. But his real test, his first real test as a head coach, has been on the recruiting trail. They've been killing it there. What do you think year one of Ryan Day is going to be on the field for the Buckeyes? And what about Justin Fields?
Well, I mean, that's the thing is, Justin Fields was a guy who came in as a highly touted quarterback. Didn't really look like he had the passing chops when in either the spring game he was at for Georgia or Ohio State spring game this year. So he's going to be more in that, I guess, Braxton mode. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, Day didn't exactly, I mean, he excelled last year as Ohio State's offensive coordinator with a completely different system and a completely different type of quarterback. So can he make that adjustment? Because it's Ohio State and I am inured to all things that could be positive and related to Ohio State, of course he will. It'll be fine. They'll have the worst defense in the country for 11 games and they'll be locked in against Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, it's still unbelievable that offensive line was such a sieve before the Michigan game.
Well, I mean, Michigan came into that game with two injured defensive ends and no ability to make it up on the interior. So, like, we were talking about this, like, Mike Dwumfor is the most critical player Michigan has this year. Because, you know, last year he played with a serious foot injury after the Maryland game. And he was still able to be an effective pass rusher. He just was completely variable on the ground. And so if you can get a version of Dwumfor who can be a every down player, then you fix a lot of those issues that you had. Like, remember the Indiana game where they just singled up the two defensive mm-hmm. tackles and then doubled the ends
yeah.
every single pass play mm-hmm. in the second half? And that was like, would never have happened if Mo Hurst was around, I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. So they need someone who can give them some rush on the interior.
What do you see, Seth?
I mean, I question how much Day was actually coaching last year when Meyer was out, because like right. he was right. only not allowed to be on the sidelines. That right. was not really a suspension. That was a get to like take, you know, Saturday off kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, Day knows his stuff as far as offense, as far as like coaching that team. I think that they did well with some of their acquisitions and coaching. Ohio State's always been good at getting assistant coaches. But they had a lot of problems with, I think, coaching on the outside linebackers last year. And they bring in, you know, Michigan's old linebackers coach. And I think that is going to be a much bigger thing for them than taking Madison.
Here we are talking about another thing that was an issue for them up until the Michigan game. It's like, what the heck?
Well, the Michigan game, they just blitzed them. Which was like not they did a lot of coaching. They're just like, okay, you guys aren't getting this.
Put
just
up 39 points in that game.
Yeah, they well, I thought in that contest though, one of the big issues for Michigan is their tight ends couldn't block their linebackers. Ohio State's linebackers won that battle consistently. Mm-hmm.
Well,
on
also,
the day.
They couldn't catch. Kind of like just a thing that happened in that one game because that's what usually happens. So
yeah, so we'll see how it goes. It's why I've reserved judgment for two. I have Michigan winning 10 of the 12, and I cannot pick Notre Dame and Ohio State yet. I got to see some things.
Notre Dame's a much better team than we remember facing last year because we saw them before book.
Before book, right?
And he's the real deal, and some of the guys that they have on defense are the real deal as well. So.
Now they lost a lot offensively. Defensively, what do they look like?
I mean, they still have those ends, so they still have that pass rush. They lost the linebackers, so they're kind of like shuffling around, and some of the moves there are, you know, they're kind of in the same position with the linebackers that we are with our like secondary. We're like, we have a few guys returning, and they're also hoping that, you know, people behind them might step up because they're looking a little thin there. But then as safety, they've got that guy who was, I think he was on Navy, and he transferred over, and he looks like a dude. So,
okay.
I mean, they've got enough players to make another, you know, if they can beat Michigan, then they can pretty much run to the national championship and get hosed 38-0 again.
All right. Well, you can read more about these opponents in the opponent preview section of Hail to the Victors 2019. Also, there's obviously a substantial Michigan position-by-position preview. If you want to get ready for the season, Hail to the Victors 2019. Seth, tell the folks how they can get their hands on it.
Well, first you can go to our website and find click on any of the lovely links there. You can go to mgoblogstore.com and order a book. You can also walk into a store, Underground Printing, the Vose Store, Literati, the M-Den, Nicola's Books, or the Split Mitt and Flint. And you can also go on Kindle and get that version.
All right. No such thing as a bad baby.
There is.
There is not.
There was, like, at night they can be bad.